Hi, this is Tracy. Today we're going to talk about financial abuse and bankruptcy. All too often, I hear tales from victims that, let's just say the playing field and the financial arena of being with an abuser was not fair. Of all the types of abuse, financial abuse is the least talked about. And I think the reason for that is there's underlying shame and hurt and fear when we come to money and when we come to being able to admit this. And in my book, there's two different types of financial abusers. The type that works and isolates you from working, and the type that makes you work and they do nothing. So you got kind of the lazy bum kind of person who is going to take your money. And then you've got the other end of it where they're the ones that work and they control everything that you spend and everything that you do. There is a fact out there that is financial abuse happens in 99% of domestic violence cases. That's crazy. It doesn't matter if you're a male or a female, if you're rich or you're poor. I think the stereotype is that people don't think that people with money can be financially abused, because just like anything with a narcissist and an abuser, the facade that the world sees is completely different than what's actually happening behind closed doors, right? So many victims feel trapped when they get into this situation. They're trapped because they have no way out. If you can't get away from the abuser, if you can't have your own funds, you can't even have an emergency fund to get out, to find a job. And so many victims are just stuck. And if you have experienced this and you might be facing bankruptcy, my guest today, Corey Curtis, he's an attorney here in Denver who specializes in bankruptcy. And he's going to answer our questions today to try to ease some of your concerns and maybe make it not so scary. Bankruptcy has such a stigma about it that makes people feel like a failure, makes them feel like they lost control, and it's very, very painful. Getting calls from creditors and not having the money to pay them, it defeats your soul. It hurts to the core, and we want to understand that. But first, we need to understand the different types of ways that people can be financially abused, because you might not even know the types of things that have been happening behind closed doors. Financial dependency starts really slowly. We have to remember that it doesn't just happen. They come in and it looks different in every situation, because every case and every person is going to manipulate you in a different way because of your vulnerabilities. They're going to see, you're a good breadwinner, then I don't have to work. Oh, okay, you want to stay home with kids? I'll do that. And that starts out so nice. If someone says, hey, you don't have to work, you stay home with the kids. But what it's doing is it's limiting you to future jobs and future employment, because if you've stayed home with the kids for 15 years, you don't have the value that you would have had in the job market. So it's limiting you, and it is controlling you. If they manage all the money, so that means you don't have money. Maybe you get an allowance for food or for groceries or to buy the kids new shoes, but you're not allowed to buy anything that you need. If you need a new tea kettle or a sled for the children, and you are begging for money, or, you know, having to negotiate it, that is financial abuse. With them controlling the money, they're hiding money. We know narcissists lie. They could certainly be hiding what they make and where it goes. So we need to be really aware and really conscious of everything that goes on. And we never should give the control to anyone else. We need to understand it in a healthy relationship. Partners work out. And if you need a new dishwasher, you plan together and you work on saving for that and reaching that goal. It should not be something that you are begging for because you can't get things done. So abusers will also hurt you at work. If you are working, they might have excessive calls to work. They may be causing conflicts with your boss or making you call in sick all the time. And when they abuse you at work, it is affecting you financially because ultimately their goal is for you to lose that job and become dependent on them so that they have all the control. Sometimes abusers borrow money and then don't pay it back. But then again, sometimes they just out and out steal money. And if you watch my interview that I did with Donna Anderson of Love Fraud the other day, she lost $250,000 to her husband. That's financial abuse. If they run up debt and they aren't paying the bills, that's financial abuse. If you are getting any public services, that means maybe Medicare, Medicaid, I don't know, all those things that get you money. A lot of times, abusers will make you abuse the system. You might not need those services, but it's more money for them. So be aware of that. The biggest thing, I think, for victims of abuse and the financial end of this dilemma of going into a bankruptcy situation is very often caused by the court system that is there to protect us, but in fact does the opposite when they're dealing with a high conflict divorce, a child parental alienation case, or a custody case. Nothing is ever easy, and they don't go away like they should. So they keep fighting like rabid dogs. And you've got this huge legal bill. And that's putting you in a situation where you might not be able to ever pay it. Think about this. If you were with an abuser and they controlled all the money and you never were able to save your own money, but now you're having to fight for your own children in court, where are you going to get the money? You just don't have it. And therefore, you might not be able to be legally represented in court. High conflict divorces can get ridiculous. And lawyers love them because the abuser is always throwing new things at you. It's you're fighting for your life. You're fighting for your children. And they know how to use this system. And what it's doing is running up the bills to be crazy. My divorce, I had 7 trials, seriously, 7 trials. And each time would just cost me more to defend myself against false allegations. And it ran up to be a $100,000 legal bill. We were fighting over $50,000. That would have been half of mine. That's it. So why do we need a $100,000 divorce? Because he knew I couldn't pay it. Because he knew that eventually I would give up, having no choice, because there's nothing you can do when you've got a $100,000 divorce, you're already in the middle of it. You have no choice. And victims often have to claim bankruptcy after something like that. They will use your credit cards, ruin your credit, apply for credit cards that you don't even know you have. Ultimately, all of these tactics are going to ruin your credit score, potentially ruin your future in the fact that you won't be able to get credit. You might not be able to get an apartment because credit reports are used so heavily for that now. When it gets to the point of bankruptcy, This is what we're going to look at today. How do we navigate those waters? And how do we protect ourselves? And how do we understand the fear and the shame that might come along with being labeled as someone who claimed bankruptcy? It feels like a failure. It feels like you've done something wrong. And as a people pleaser, we don't like to do things wrong. And when we do get accused of things, we defend ourselves, and it can be really hard. So let me introduce my guest today. It's attorney Corey Curtis from Denver, Colorado, and he's here to talk to us. Let's see what he's got. Welcome, Corey. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Do you want to tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Corey Curtis. I'm originally from Utah, a little small town in Utah called Vernal. Great little place. Love it. Go back and visit as much as I can. Married, two wonderful kids. You might be able to see their picture behind me in the screen there. You know, love my kids, love my family, great family. We've been here in Colorado since 2008. Moved here after law school. And we love it. We're never going anywhere else. Colorado is our home.
Good, good. We really like it. And how all the financial, of all the legal things, how'd you pick bankruptcy?
Actually, I didn't pick bankruptcy. When I graduated from law school, that was in 2008. And that's right when the big recession really hit the nation. Mm-hmm. And I wanted as a young attorney to go out and get a job at a firm and get experienced. And unfortunately, there were no jobs at the time. So my original plan was to hang my shingle out. I wanted to have my own practice, but I didn't want to do it right out of the gate and without any experience. But I was literally left with no choice. There was nobody was hiring, and I had a family to feed. So hung my shingle out. Originally, my interest lay in tax and in estate planning. That's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But people had a need for bankruptcy, and I had a need for clients that were willing to pay me. So I had to learn how to do bankruptcy, and I'd taken some courses on it in law school. I learned to do bankruptcy and found out that I actually really, really liked it. Mm-hmm. Before I went to law school, I was in sales. I actually did customer service. And I had accounts at an aerospace firm, worked in there. And I found out that what I really liked to honestly was meeting new people, getting to figure out what their problems were, and then doing some problem solving, helping them figure out how to solve whatever the issue is that they might have. And bankruptcy just shoehorned into that really, really well. So people come into my office quite often. They're under a tremendous load of emotions. They're stressed out. They've got creditors calling. They've got people trying to sue them. And they've just got this emotional burden on them, and they just don't know where to go or how to solve it. And I know how to get them through it. Mm-hmm. And so it's, for me, I really like bankruptcy. It's one of my favorite areas of law, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. But I like it because clients come in and they're embarrassed, or they're scared, or they're, you know, there's a lot of confusion about what's happening. A lot of times there's shame that they're in that kind of situation. But I'm able to kind of walk them through what that is. And at the end of the day, they leave really, really happy. Mm-hmm. You know, that stress is gone. Once I can walk them through the process, they realize it's not a scary thing at all. It's really, and it's actually a lot simpler than people think it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that especially once that whole recession period of 2008 through about 2012, I think that a lot of that stigma associated with bankruptcy, a lot of people feel a lot of shame and say, oh, you know, no one's going to want to give me any credit, and my friends are going to look bad down on me. And that's gone. That's mm-hmm. really gone. I think people wouldn't realize that, you know, 3 out of 5 of their neighbors have declared bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, thank you for sharing that, because I think we all get to where we are not by choice.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like no matter where we are, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you by default, you wanted to do this, but this is what happened. I did not want to be an advocate for victims of abuse, but I am. So it happens. And I think it helps us find what is our passion and what we're here to do, because what you do is help people get through one of the hardest times of their life. And let's start off with, what is bankruptcy and what are the differences? I know there's two different kinds, and if you could just clarify that for us so we know where we're starting.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two types of bankruptcies. Chapter 7 bankruptcy is what most people think of when they read about bankruptcy. So that's where you basically eliminate all of your debt. It's, you know, it's the quickest, it's the easiest, it's what most people want to get when they're looking to declare bankruptcy. Chapter 13, that's when you hear, you know, like airlines or you know, other big companies when they're restructuring debt. A chapter 13 is just like that, only for individuals like you and I. It's where you pay off a portion of that debt over time. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that time period, which is usually either 3 years or 5 years, whatever is left outstanding or unpaid, that is forgiven. Mm-hmm. Now, chapter 13s are really good for what they're intended to do. I like them for certain purposes. I like them, let's say, for example, you have a home. You're trying to save your home. You're behind on your mortgage. Chapter 13 is a really, really good way to save your home. Let's say maybe you have some items that you don't necessarily want to have to give up in a Chapter 7. Maybe you have some antiques, some heirlooms, some really, well, I don't know, maybe in Colorado, believe it or not, is a very gun-friendly state. So I get a lot of clients that come through that have weapons. And a lot of them, honestly, are their heirloom pieces passed down from great-grandparents or grandparents. They don't want to risk losing those in a Chapter 7. So instead, we'll put them in a Chapter 13 so they can keep them. You know, and 13s, believe it or not, every once in a while I'll get a client who, just for whatever reason, really, really wants to pay back creditors something, but they can't afford to pay back everything. Mm-hmm. So 13 is a good way for them to pay back at least a portion. It makes them feel a little bit better about themselves, that they've done everything that they could do, but they don't run the risk of getting sued and garnished by a creditor.
Right, right. And there are, you know, things that you were saying, that the Chapter 7, which is the more common of the one for normal people, I think. Mm-hmm. Do you have to give up everything? Like you mentioned the house. Right. If you go 7, can you keep your house?
Yes. Most of my clients, the majority of my clients can keep 100% of everything that they already own when they come in the door. Now, in order to keep your house and to keep your vehicle, if you want to declare a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, the one rule is you have to be current on your mortgage or on your car payments. If you're behind on those payments and you go to declare a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you're going to probably lose that asset.
Wow.
Yep. So that's one of the things that I talk to about clients. When they come in my door, we sit down with them for at least an hour, almost every single time, just trying to assess what assets do they own? Where are they on those payments? If it's a car or a house, mm-hmm. What is their income? And what's their budget? What are their debts looking like and their expenses? We need to figure out, one, does an individual even qualify for Chapter 7? Because there are requirements. There's some hoops you've got to jump through. Mm-hmm. And two, if they don't, what does a Chapter 13 look like? Or if they do, what's going to happen in that Chapter 7? Mm-hmm. So the long answer to your very short question is, yes, you can keep the house. You can keep your cars. As long as you're current on those payments, you should be fine.
Oh, that's good to know, because I know people are, you know, especially a car, when you face something like bankruptcy, you know, the stigma is you're going to lose everything. You'll never get another credit card. You'll never get a car loan. And that instills more fear with people.
Right. It does. So one thing that I wish that more people would understand is that by the time you are thinking about coming in and talking to me about bankruptcy, your credit score is probably shot. Mm-hmm. I think my average client's credit score is around a 525. Okay. So what most people don't understand is that what those things that are dragging your credit score down, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the overdue payments or the late payments or the lawsuits, whatever, those things will actually come off in a bankruptcy. Now, bankruptcy does affect your score negatively, that's true, but it wipes out all of that other stuff that's currently dragging your score down.
Mm.
And I would say probably 90% of my clients actually experience an uptick in their credit score after filing bankruptcy. So
wow.
People think it's going to kill my credit score, but the point is your score is already shot.
Mm-hmm.
Bankruptcy is probably the quickest way to repair your credit, believe it or not.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And like the whole, like, again, I don't know if this is a myth or not, but like you have it on your record for 7 years. So does that mean for 7 years you can never get another credit card, or if your car dies in 7 years, you can't get another car loan?
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely not true. So the bankruptcy will remain on your credit score from 7 to 10 years. That's true. However, most of my clients actually get credit card offers in the mail before their bankruptcy is even done.
Wow.
Yeah. They will get offers from car lenders, you know, saying, hey, come on in. We specialize in lending to people that have just gotten through a bankruptcy, or hey, we'll go ahead and we'll give you a line of credit. That's usually not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, your interest rate on those loans is going to be incredibly high,
mm-hmm.
and it will remain that way for about 3 years.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that, like right now, the way the lending rules are set up for mortgages, they won't lend to you for at least 3 years after your bankruptcy. But after that, if your credit score is high enough, and if you've spent your time wisely for that 3 years after you filed for bankruptcy and built your score up, you can get a home loan.
Wow.
Years. Yeah. So getting credit is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is if you do get credit to build up your credit score, you know, make sure you've paid everything off timely. Because mm-hmm. a large part of your credit score is based on what's your credit line, are you using that credit line, and how quickly do you repay whatever the balance is. So mm-hmm. if you've got a small credit line, $300, $400, $500, and you're using it and you're paying it off in full each month, that actually is a huge factor in how they calculate your credit score.
Oh, so that's a really good tip to start to reestablish your credit as soon as you can. Because again, when that 3 year hits, it'd be nice to get a mortgage or not be afraid that you have no options for that.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly right. So a lot of people tend to really shy away from getting extra credit or getting a new line of credit because they feel like, well, you know, I've gotten myself into this mess. I don't want to repeat the same mistakes. But my advice is go get at least one line of credit,
mm-hmm.
use it, but make sure it's just paid off each month.
Okay.
That's yep. good. Yeah. You'll see your score start to climb really fast.
And I know that credit scores affect like getting an apartment or, mm-hmm. you know, a job. They do credit background checks. How does bankruptcy look on those? And are people in trouble with getting an apartment because you've claimed bankruptcy?
Honestly, that is on an owner by owner basis. Some apartment managers, they don't really care. Mm-hmm. And it depends, honestly, geographically where you're at. If you're in the Denver metro area where, let's say, you know, apartments are coming at a premium, they're very hard to find, they can be a little bit more choosy. It might affect your ability to get a home, or not a home, but at least an apartment or a rental.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in other areas where they're looking for tenants to move in, they're mm-hmm. not really going to care, honestly. They mm-hmm. may require a bigger security deposit,
mm-hmm.
or they may require first and last plus a security, but you should still be able to get in. And again, people are afraid of that because, again, there's that stigma that people aren't going to lend to me. People aren't going to do anything because I've got this bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't understand is that, honestly, and from 2008 to 2012, there were so many people that filed for bankruptcy that if you were to eliminate everybody that filed for bankruptcy in the last 8 years, mm-hmm. you'd cut off about half of your potential clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most people don't understand. There's a lot of people out there in the same financial problems as they are that mm-hmm. have filed for bankruptcy. And as you know, business owners just can't discriminate like that, like they used to be able to in the old days.
Well, that's good to know. And I know that there are certain things that you can do, but by yourself. But tell mm-hmm. me, why do people need a lawyer? Because I know they're, you know, they're like, I don't have enough money to pay my bills. How am I going to pay a lawyer? So, sure. You know, what is the advantage? And can someone do this by themselves while it's not encouraged?
You can, if you've got a lot of time on your hands and you're really good with numbers, you might be able to get your way through it.
Okay. But
there's a lot of math involved and a lot of numbers involved with this, and there's enough steps that even attorneys who've been doing this, we don't do this by hand. We have software, specialized software that helps get us through it because it is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So a person could go down theoretically and go get the forms and fill everything out and try to do it themselves if they wanted to. I think they'll quickly find though that it's complicated enough that this really does warrant a specialist. It really does warrant at least talking to somebody who knows the ins, the outs, what needs to go on what form, how to calculate what. Mm-hmm. Because you could, honestly, if you try to do it yourself and you miss filing a particular document that's required to go in, or you've not done it right, you're going to end up going and seeing the trustee. You have a meeting of creditors that you have to go attend with a trustee who is charged with overseeing this process.
Mm-hmm.
You may end up having to go two or three times because you keep missing documents or something was done incorrectly. And if you miss certain deadlines, I know here in Colorado, some trustees are very strict about this. They'll completely dismiss your case, and now you have to start over from scratch. That filing fee that you've paid and the time that you've spent is now all for naught because you just didn't know.
Right, right.
So that would be the advantage, just somebody who can get it done right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is going to be that many, many times clients have, by the time they want to file for bankruptcy, they've got creditors just blowing their phone up or banging the door down or coming with, you know, summons to appear in court for a lawsuit. An attorney, what we do is we can call these people up and say, hey, listen, I represent so-and-so, leave them alone. Okay. Those creditors now have to call me rather than my client. It gives my client actually some breathing room for a little bit. In a lot of cases, if there's a pending lawsuit, I can call up whoever the law firm is that's suing, and I can work out a deal with them that will make it so that, you know, they don't have to go to court. Mm-hmm. It gives the client some time to get their bankruptcy in place, and there's no garnishments that we have to worry about.
That is the biggest thing, and I am not encouraging anyone to try this alone because... we got here and we mismanaged things. You don't want to risk managing this the wrong way. And, you know, when we talk about victims of financial abuse, we are talking about people who are very often abused in other ways. Mm-hmm. So they are vulnerable. They are, you know, scared. They are fearful. Everything that happens with the bankruptcy, you're also dealing with this mind confusion of abuse. And with 99% of domestic violence survivors being a victim of financial abuse, you need the help. This is a place where they should not skimp and they should get the help and do it right. Because if you clear this off, your life will be better.
Yeah, 100% agree. And that's the thing, victims of domestic violence of any kind, they need an advocate in their corner who can get in there, can stand between them and whoever it is that's coming after them and act as a shield. And that's what we do. That's part of what my job is. What I'm hired to do is to act as that buffer, that barrier between whoever's coming after them and the victim.
So basically you're like an Avenger and we just need to get you a big shield to shield away the bad people that are calling them.
There you go. Sure.
So he's like, never thought of it.
I'll take that title.
I think you should take it I think that's a really good thing. When people are looking at this kind of debt or mm-hmm. is there like a limit? Can they do this for $1,000 or, I mean, not the cost of doing it, but how much is warranted to get into a bankruptcy situation?
No, that's an excellent question. I get asked that quite a bit. Is there a minimum? Mm. That's kind of what you're asking. Is there a minimum to file for bankruptcy? Truthfully, there's no minimum. You can file on any amount. It could be a penny, really, if that's what you wanted. It's, you know, obviously that's a ridiculous scenario, but it could be. you know, I've had clients who've come in on as little as, you know, $6,000-$7,000.
Mm-hmm.
I've had clients that have come in on almost $2 million.
Wow.
So it's a wide range in there. Now, the clients that come in on the really, really small amounts, I'm going to have a really long conversation with them about, is this really the smartest thing to do? Are there other alternatives that might be better? Because when you file for bankruptcy, you get one shot at this every 8 years. So you need to think very carefully, do I want to play my get out of jail free card on this somewhat small amount? Mm-hmm. And but it depends. Everybody's situations are different. I had a young man come in who wanted to file for bankruptcy on $8,000. Now I talked to him and, you know, it turns out he was single, no kids, you know, and he really could, I advised him, listen, go get a second job. That's actually going to be better than, you know, spending, you know, $2,000 with me, you know, to get this taken care of, because you, this might be an issue you need to resolve again in the long run. And you could take care of this by getting another job. Now, I had another client come in who's on a fixed income, Social Security disability. There's absolutely no way she can go get a job. And she has a very fixed income. So for her, $8,000 trying to get around that alternatively was not an option, at least in that case. Sometimes what we can do in the alternative is we'll try to work with the debtor or the creditors to maybe reduce some of this debt down. You know, that's an option too. There, a lot of creditors, they're really reluctant to do that. Mm-hmm. But that's another option to try and reduce the debt down to a manageable level without having to actually go through the formal bankruptcy process.
Yeah. And that would save that young man from having this, you know, for his 7 or 10 years that it's going to be on his record.
Right.
You know, but again, if you look at the example of the woman on the fixed income, mm-hmm. she didn't have a choice. You know, she right. couldn't get that job or, you know, add to her income in any way that was going to get her out. Is yeah. there something like credit counseling or debt consolidation? I hear commercials on TV for that. How yeah. does that work if they are looking like that young man, looking for an alternative situation? Does it stop the interest or something? Can you do things like that?
Sure. So it doesn't stop the interest. Really what you're doing is you're effectively hiring a company to manage these payments for you. So instead of, maybe you've got 5 creditors, instead of writing out 5 checks, you're going to send 1 check to this company and then they will distribute the money out to these creditors. Mm. Most of them though, you got to be careful when you deal with these companies, most of them, they don't reduce your debt at all. Oh. All they're doing is they're saying, hey, pay us this set sum of money. We'll take our cut and we will then pay out to these other creditors on your behalf. So it doesn't really, all it does is it makes it easier, more convenient for you as the debtor to just write 1 check rather than 5, 10 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, I say 9 times out of 10, these debt consolidation companies, they don't really work because it doesn't eliminate the problem. All it does is it just makes it a tiny bit more convenient to right. help manage those payments. And what ends up happening is the client will end up making these payments to these debt consolidation companies, thinking, hey, I'm paying $500 a month to reduce down my debt, not fully realizing this debt consolidation company is taking 150 of that. So only 350 is being paid out. It's not really reducing the debt as much as they think it is.
Yeah.
So it can work in certain circumstances. Most of the time I see clients have tried to go down the debt consolidation route. It doesn't work that well. And then they end up coming into me anyway.
Right. And do those debt consolidator people call off the dogs, like you were saying, that when they file bankruptcy, that's one of the superpowers of a lawyer, is that you don't get those calls anymore? Does the debt consolidator do that?
They can. Yeah, if that's part of the services that you have hired them to do, they will call and will broker a deal with whoever the lender is so that they stop calling and bugging and things like that. And they'll broker some sort of deal saying, listen, instead of our client paying you $200 a month, would you be willing to accept 75? And a lot of times they can get those deals, but the problem you run into is, again, let's say you're paying 75 instead of the 200, but your interest is 50 of that 75. Mm-hmm. You're not really reducing the debt down like you think you are. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. People don't really realize that, yeah, there's still interest on this that has to be paid. And when you're making those payments, they're going to apply it to the interest and then to the principal.
Yeah. So,
you know, if you're $200, you know, like I said, a 50 of that is going towards interest rate, and now you're only paying 75, that now means that you are going to have to pay that much longer, take that much longer to get the debt paid off.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, the idea would be, like the suggestion to the other person was, get a different, get more money into the funnel versus, mm-hmm. you know, paying less will help you in the short term, but in the long term, it's still affecting
yep.
your credit. You're still not getting it gone.
Getting
it's just
going
to grow and grow and grow, which means right. in a year, you're going to be in the bankruptcy situation going, I keep paying and it's not going anywhere.
Right. And then, and the other trap that people fall into is now they've got their payments reduced. Now they've got a little bit of a window there, maybe a little bit of a cushion or buffer that they, now they've got some breathing room. And instead of taking that extra money and like you were talking about funneling that in towards the debt, instead of doing what they need to do to get ahead, they'll take it, put it towards other things that maybe aren't the best choices, or maybe it's things that they need to survive. But again, you're not getting ahead on paying your debt off. You're going to either stay the same. In a lot of cases, you'll fall behind. And in about a year, you'll be in my office anyway.
I know that there's things that people can't write off. And I know this because my son is working for a tax service. And they help people get out of tax debt with the IRS. And so he told me that you can't write off if you have debt to the IRS. Is that true?
That's not entirely true. A lot of people think that you can't write off taxes at all. You actually can, but there are some kind of complicated criteria behind that. So if the taxes are old enough and you file timely, then if you meet certain criteria, you actually can write off tax debt. What's most important is that you make sure your taxes are filed on time and that the IRS has not... they call it a substitute for a return. If the IRS has filed a substitute for return because you didn't file your own tax return, you're not going to be able to write off that tax. So a lot of people don't file their taxes because they're worried, well, if I file my taxes, the IRS is going to know that I owe them money, and so I'm going to hold off. What they don't realize is that if you don't file your tax return, the IRS is going to hit you with a 5% per month failure to file penalty. And then they'll also hit you with a 0.5% per month failure to pay penalty on top of that. So they both those penalties cap out at 25%, but exactly. So it's better to just get your tax return filed timely, because what that'll do is it will set you up so that down the road, if you need to, you still can't pay that off. They will eventually become dischargeable. And the general rule of thumb is you want to, whatever taxes were due 4 years ago, you can get that in.
Okay.
You could potentially discharge as long as you filed it timely and you haven't done a few other things, but that's kind of an in-depth conversation. I don't know if we could get
That was enough to like make people understand. And again, it's this video is to help people understand and alleviate some of the fears and the questions that they might have that will help them get into an office of a lawyer wherever they live. What is the process besides coming to you? What is the process? What does a person have to do? What do they have to gather? Is there, what's on their end of things that they should be getting to you or getting to someone that can help them?
Yeah, absolutely. So documentation, I have to have paperwork, lots of paperwork. So when a client comes in my door, I have a pretty long packet that I'm going to give to them. It's a very long questionnaire. It's about 50 pages long. It's pretty big.
Wow.
It's large, but it will cover all of the financial questions that the court has. Because the court has to know every minute detail about your finances. So we need to know income. We need to know assets. We need to know debts. We need to know everything about what's happened in your life for basically the last 2 to 3 years. Okay. So we need the documentation to back that up. So I would tell clients, keep your tax returns, keep your pay stubs, statements that are coming into the in the mail to them, keep them. Okay. Don't just throw them away because you don't want to pay them. You need to open them up and keep them. If you're getting notices from, you know, government agencies, keep those. We need all of that information in order to put this bankruptcy petition together for our clients. And if we don't have it, then I can't do my job effectively without that information.
Right.
The other thing I would do too is if you're getting calls from, say, the IRS, don't ignore them. Their garnishment powers are a lot more powerful than just, say, your regular lender. Call them up. Talk to them. Don't worry about it. Let me see here. Don't ignore summons. That's another one. I see people, somebody will come and serve them. They will ignore the summons. They will miss their court date. The creditor gets a default judgment. Next thing my client knows, they're being garnished at 25% of their paycheck is now going out the door. And if they thought money was tight before, that 25% hits, things are really bad at that point. And that makes it that much harder for the client to be able to come up with the money to pay an attorney such as myself if they've got 25% of their income gone immediately. And once a garnishment's in place, it is almost impossible for me to convince whoever holds that garnishment to stop garnishing, because they have no, there's really no reason for them to stop. Until we file for bankruptcy, they're going to keep taking that money.
So, but after you file, then that garnishment might be put on hold or something?
It does. So when we file for bankruptcy, that puts in place what's called an automatic stay. That prevents everyone, and I mean everyone, including Uncle Sam. They cannot collect from you at all. They can't call you about collections. They can't send you letters about collections. If there's a lawsuit that's pending, it has to be stopped. If there's a garnishment in place, it has to be stopped. Mm-hmm. That all ends immediately the second you file for bankruptcy.
That's a win-win.
What was that?
That's a win-win.
Yes, absolutely. So there's some motivation into coming in and getting us what we need so we can file that bankruptcy, get the automatic stay in place, so that we can stop all of this stuff that's happening.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. What else do we need to know? How long does it take to get a bankruptcy? Is it like next week?
That's a good question. It depends on what kind of bankruptcy you file, and a lot of it depends on the client. If a client has all their documentation in place, they're really on top of things, from start to finish on a Chapter 7, we can usually be in and out from the day somebody walks in my door to the day they get what's called a discharge, where those debts are forgiven, about 6 months from start to finish. Okay. Now that sounds like a little bit of time, maybe a little bit longer than people were expecting, but realize most of that time is spent just waiting to get that discharge. So, you know, client takes about a month from when the client walks in my door to where we actually file, if they have all of the documentation. It takes about a month.
Okay.
From when we file, it takes about another month to get in so we can have our meeting of creditors with the trustee. So there's month two. After that, creditors have 60 days to file their objection to the having the debts discharged. That's two more months. And then it takes the court about a month after that to actually issue the discharge. So you're looking again 5 to 6 months. Now that's a Chapter 7. Chapter 13s are more complicated. They're more costly. They take longer. Mm-hmm. I think the quickest we've gotten a Chapter 13, honestly, was probably about that same 5 to 6 month range. The mm-hmm. longest one took us over a year, almost a year and a half.
Wow.
But that one was a really complicated Chapter 13 that we actually took over for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of issues going on.
Yeah.
So it depends if it's a 7 or 13.
Okay. Well, that's really helpful. Is there any other tips that you have that can just guide somebody? Your closing thoughts, like a closing argument in a lawyer case.
Yeah, absolutely. So my wish is that I really wish people would come talk to me before they started dipping into their retirement accounts, their mm-hmm. IRAs, their 401ks. Believe it or not, that is almost 100%. We can save almost 100% of that in a bankruptcy. So most people, we can save 100% of that up to basically over $1 million. Most people don't have $1 million in retirement. Mm. So I wish people would come talk to me before they drain their retirement accounts so that we can wipe out the debt, but they still have their nest egg intact. Don't be giving things away. So don't transfer ownership of a home to somebody else thinking that that's going to protect it if you file for bankruptcy. Don't give vehicles away. Again, same thing, thinking that you're going to be able to protect it by having it titled into somebody else's name. There are look-back periods. Here in Colorado, it's a 4-year look-back period.
Oh, wow.
If you're going to give it to like a friend or a relative, that can be brought back in, and it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. Don't wait to come see me. You know, when that garnishment's there, you're almost too late at that point. I mean, we can stop it, but it's really, really hard. If you know that things are getting tight financially, just come talk to me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost anything to sit down and have a consultation with me. Honestly, I don't know any attorneys that charge a consultation for a bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't cost anything other than maybe a half an hour, an hour of your time to kind of figure out where you're at and what your options are.
And so, I think what you've been telling us is going to get people to walk into an office because, again, we're going back to that fear and mm-hmm. we're going back to letting it get to a point where, you know, you're not returning creditors' calls. You're not, you're avoiding, like you said. I know people and I've talked to victims that have had a little bit of savings and they, you know, give it to their sister or their mother and right. that can get them in trouble. So by talking to someone before all these drastic steps happen, they can protect themselves and start their life again.
Yeah, absolutely. And victims of domestic violence, a lot of times they're either they've just gone through a divorce or they're in a divorce. And that adds a whole other layer to bankruptcy. And at least here in my firm, we do a lot of family law, which involves domestic violence. And we do a lot of bankruptcy. And so the two, believe it or not, are intertwined quite a bit.
Oh, I'll bet.
So if you talk to an attorney and you have this issue of domestic violence and you've got issue of these other issues of family law going on or you've gone through those, make sure whoever, that would be my advice, whoever they go talk to, make sure that they know family law as well to understand what the ramifications are if they were to go and file for bankruptcy, how that may affect whatever's happening on the other side, on the domestic violence side.
Wow. Well, you have been an amazing guest and I'm so thankful for you for your time today. And this will help so many victims forever. So thank you very much. And if anyone is in the Denver area looking for a bankruptcy lawyer, call Corey. He's great. And I know that he will help you get out of the hole and the pain that you're suffering. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
Great. Thanks. Thank you so much for watching this video today. If you liked it, please subscribe. I am in the middle of an Ask the Expert series, and I've got some of the coolest people lined up to talk with you and to talk with me to teach us what they know. There are so many cool people doing great things in this arena, and I want to introduce you to them because we have resources and we have experts. And today's expert, I hope, helped you understand and maybe put a little bit of dent in between you and the fear if you're facing this type of financial abuse. If you're not sure that you're with a narcissist, I've created a quiz on my website that will help direct you as to the behaviors that you might be experiencing and help you figure out where to go from here. Go to narcissistabusesupport.com/quiz to take that quiz and see what we suggest is the next step for you. Where do we go if you're in the newbie state learning about narcissists? What do you need? I get to meetups. I run 2 meetups here in Colorado and people are like, what should I read? What do I do? Where do I go? They're looking and grasping and grabbing for something. My website is that tool. We've got all these solutions. We've got the books that we recommend that you read, and we've got listings for meetups all over the country. So get to my website and let's see if we can get you started on your road to recovery. If you're just in that final stage where you are like, you've learned everything about them, stop watching narcissist videos and let's heal the PTSD. Let's work on the pain and the anger that still sits inside of you, because that's the only barrier between you and healing, is getting rid of the anger, getting a full understanding of tools that can help you when the triggers come. Wouldn't it be nice if the triggers didn't happen and you didn't like go back into that anxiety filled life where your heart is like, and you don't know what to do? Let's get rid of that. So visit my site, and this is Tracy. Have a nice day. Thank you so much for watching. That's all I got.